straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
You heard that, young lady. It's episode 118 of On Second Thought, your Statesman Longhorn podcast. I'm Cedric Golden. He's Kirk Bowles, and we have the longtime friend of the podcast, Brian Davis, is here in the jungle. We are sponsored by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Drink them if you got them, BD.
Nice.
What's going on, brother?
Hello, boys. How we doing in here?
We're getting closer to game week, just a couple days away.
From sir? From what?
From what? What?
You tell the people.
What am I telling them?
What game? What
the
time?
Iowa State game.
Iowa State and
the
who?
The game of the century.
Okay, cool.
And your Texas Longhorns.
I thought we were getting closer to the North Pole, as cold as it is.
It's a little chilly in our new
digs. You know
here.
What? If you guys want to come down to the States,
you know,
bring your grill. We will hang some meat in this studio.
You know, it's close to the holiday season. We need to have a blanket drive for us.
It's cold. It's cold in
it
here.
Is cold.
I've got the cashmere wool blend overcoat on with a sweater and a dang wool cap on.
But you know what is not cold? That'd be the Texas Longhorns.
How about?
They have now won one in a row.
Wow.
And
they're 1-0. They're 1-0.
They're 1-0, which is all that counts. Big win in Lubbock. Brian, you and I were there.
Yes,
we were. Did that momentum feed into this weekend against Iowa State?
Well, Kirk, as you know, momentum is an illusion, right?
And so, I've heard that.
Right. Anyway, but yes, I think it absolutely does. I said this last week on another thing we put together here in this podcast studio, but I believe it.
Give it a plug, dude.
Longhorns Unfiltered.
I love
come
that.
Catch that in post games.
And what's the other one?
Longhorn Confidential. You can catch that on Mondays.
We're all
over the board.
That's right.
Here's the thing. If Texas beat Texas Tech, I said they were going to win out. If Texas lost to Texas Tech, I thought they would lose to Iowa State.
Okay.
I'm sticking with that. Texas finishes the regular season 9-3, and I'll go ahead and put this out there because I think this is going to happen. I think that somehow, some way, the Longhorns will end up in Arlington playing for the Big 12 title.
That's crazy talk. But
is it?
You're talking crazy.
But I agree with him.
I agree with him.
I think they're going to end up in Arlington.
I want to be at Jerry World.
Yeah.
80,000. It's 80,000 strong if it's Texas OU.
Okay.
It's about 60 or 50.
No, they're going to fill that puppy
they
up.
They won't fill
it Mountaineer
up.
Mountaineers?
I love my Hill Country Mountaineers who have emailed me over the years.
They've never won the Big 12.
I ripped Morgantown once, and I got some very terse emails. It's a big community
They'll
of Mountaineers here.
They'll be here. Their couch is in the U-Haul trailer behind them, and they will be driving to Arlington.
Almost heaven.
Almost seven.
Yeah. So, well, you know what, guys? It is senior day
on
Saturday.
Well, wait a minute. Before that, I want to know who they're playing. Who are they playing in Arlington?
Well, now that I don't know. I mean, I still think it's probably going to – well, in my scenario, if it happens the way I think it will, it'll be a West Virginia rematch.
Has to be.
Yeah, it would have to be, yeah.
It's going to be hard to get an OU rematch, I think.
I just think that – here's the thing.
West Virginia could lose to Stillwater this week.
No, I agree with that, but I just think that what the way it's going to shake out, if you've been watching all these games every week – and most of the fans who listen to this podcast and are hardcore Big 12 fans know that Oklahoma defense has problems. And I think that Will Grier and company will have, I don't want to say a field day, but I think they'll have a lot of success in Morgantown on Black Friday.
And that's assuming they get out of Stillwater with a dub.
Mm.
Even if they lose in Stillwater and beat OU, then they're still going to get in, right? Because then they would have wins over OU and Texas.
Well, I mean, does Texas lose to Iowa State?
No,
I mean,
Texas is not going to lose to Iowa State. David Montgomery is going to be out for the first half.
Hey, they're a three-point favorite, dog.
That doesn't.
It's not like they're a prohibitive favorite.
Don't look at those points spreads.
Why are you counting, you know, Cyclone wins, you know? Those chickens ain't been hatched yet.
I'm going to tell you about these chickens. They are better at home. They're going to play great. It's senior day for guys like Breckenhager, Chris Nelson, Chris Boyd. Gerard Hurd, Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
People of that
so
ilk.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that they're not going to go in and lay an egg. These chickens aren't going to lay an egg
Didn't
on
Iowa
senior
State
day.
Win in Stillwater?
That's Stillwater. This is Austin, dog.
Oh, Texas didn't win in Stillwater.
That makes me think of that song, There Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens.
There you go.
Hey, Akeem Butler's the real deal.
He is.
Brock Purdy, quarterback, freshman, what, 5-0?
He's okay.
And they got the best defense in the conference.
And, you know, you got to remember, too, that this was an Iowa State program that gave Texas all they wanted last year in Ames, and that was before they switched quarterbacks.
And then, the time before in Ames, Jay Gray fumbled on the goal line, and they should have won that game, too.
So it wasn't a fumble.
But it was a
not
fumble.
Not really.
Dollar signs.
BCS.
I think it's going to be a good game.
I think it's going to be a real good game. I think that, you know, we've talked about this every week. The Longhorns are a team that they're not going to blow anybody out, but they're not going to get blown out. And every game the rest of the way is going to come down to the final few possessions.
They all have.
We saw that against OSU. We saw it against West Virginia. Definitely Texas Tech. And I expect this week to be the same thing. And you know, it sounds crazy, but I think Kansas will give them a little bit of a tussle, you know, next week until they remember that they're Kansas. Or at least,
well, and we were talking last week. He said, boy, Sam's due for a clunker. He didn't get it
right
in Lubbock. 4 touchdowns over 300 yards passing. So he is due a clunker, but he's just been amazingly consistent since the Maryland game.
He's their best player.
He is their best player, and LJ's the second.
Who would have thought that at the beginning of the season that Sam Ellinger would be the best player on this team?
Well, who thought that
leaving FedEx Field?
I did not.
Well, and I wrote that Monday how this is a Big 12 team, no defense, lots of passing. You know, I mean, I came into this thinking, well, they're going to win with defense. The defense is really good. They got 8 seniors on there and some talented freshmen. But they don't have a dynamic quarterback. That whole script has been flipped.
Right. Yeah.
That stuns me. Are y'all surprised?
Todd Orlando's the most beleaguered coach on that staff right now.
Hasn't figured
it out.
He get dumb in a hurry? What happened?
He didn't. They haven't made the right plays. They've been caught slipping. They can't start a game without giving up a touchdown.
What is that about, BD?
Well, my biggest takeaway on all this is they're not getting pressure on the quarterback.
No, they're not.
They're just not. And so if you're not doing that up front, you're going to have problems on the back end, especially in this league where everyone can throw it, everyone can hurl it. I mean, you know, we like Breckenhager, but what's he really done this season? You know, not that much. Omenihu has had really fantastic flashes of brilliance.
He's made himself a little bit of money
this year. He has. Mm-hmm. But can he look himself in the mirror and say that he went strong for 60 minutes, you know, all 12 weeks?
I don't know. That's
that
a question only you can answer.
And so, you know, Chris Nelson plays in a very difficult position, just like Puna Ford last year, where Puna didn't have the big stats, but he ended up being the Big 12 defensive lineman of the year because he took on blockers, allowed Gary Johnson,
freed him up.
And Anthony Wheeler freed up to go make plays. Jeffrey McCulloch, I think he would probably like a mulligan on some plays this year, namely the 2-point conversion against
Gary Johnson. Hadn't had a great year, has he?
I don't think he really has.
He's flashed, but he hasn't been great overall.
Not been consistent,
yeah,
has he?
Yeah, and that to me, we talk about what's wrong with Orlando, what's wrong with the defense. To me, that's it. It's the inconsistency of their best players.
As to
what's happened. And that's not to mean that they're I'm not saying that they're terrible. I'm not saying that they're ready for the Hall of Fame. They've just been inconsistent, and they've been inconsistent at the most high-profile times.
Well, the other thing we've talked about, and Brian, you mentioned it, I think, in the news conference last week about how little depth Texas has, that if you know you go down below that first team and you got some issues along with that, I wonder if they're working them too hard. You know, they got the Toughness Tuesday, or they're being more physical than maybe Mac's teams were, especially at the end of his tenure. And are they getting worn out? Is that one of the reasons for the fourth quarter malaise?
You know, it could be. And the one thing we've talked about in the office, Duck, and a little bit on this podcast is the differences between college and pro. Those pro guys don't hit at all
during
the week anymore.
Right.
But to Longhorns, to hear guys like Chris Nelson and Charles Omenihu talk about Toughness Tuesday, their guys flying around and running into each other. And sometimes I think you might need to pull back on that, especially if you're a banged-up team like Texas is. And I'm wondering if Tom has done that. I haven't asked a player about that, but I'm going to ask after this upcoming game because you know what you're going to get out of these guys.
Now, they got to be in shorts all week long after that physical Texas Tech game.
And yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'm curious. You know, we're going to go talk to the coordinators here today, and we'll get Tom again tomorrow, but it does make you wonder. Colin Johnson got hurt in practice last week.
Right.
Brandon Jones hurt in practice. You know.
Or the hotel.
Or oh, that's right. Well, he aggravated at the team hotel, right? Running to the buffet.
Yeah, those hotel drills are tough.
I know.
They should not be hitting in the ballroom.
But if you hollered out all you can eat pancakes, I'm going to come running too.
I'm going to come walk. I'm going to come walking, but I'm going to get there.
Get there.
Well, they're really banged up, and you know Brandon Jones is iffy. Colin Johnson, as you said, he may be out with a knee for another game. You know, Josh Thompson was hurt. PJ Locke had the bum toe.
It was a bum toe.
Yeah,
right.
Toe or lock, something like that. But, you know, there was a long litany of injuries after the Texas Tech game.
But everybody's banged up.
But they don't have that much depth, as Brian, you know, keeps referring to.
You think Iowa State is deep?
No, but maybe they don't have the injuries. They don't also have David Montgomery in the first half, which I think could be very, very telling.
Which, you know, the thing about that, I'm writing these for the matchups for Saturday's paper. You know, one of the matchups in my mind is David Montgomery versus his own patience. And here's why I say that. When you're the second leading rusher in the Big 12 in yards per game, and you have to sit out one half, and you got to watch your teammates get out there, you're going to be anxious and chomping at the bit. And when you finally get in there, don't overdo it. Just do your thing. Because if you do try to do too much, that plays into Texas's hands. I think that is exactly – I don't say what Texas is hoping for, because – you know, both Herman and we're going to hear from Todd Orlando, where they say, you know, they're going to run the same offense no matter what. But if I'm David Montgomery, just, hey, man, be cool. Let your teammates do their thing. And then when you get in there, just try to make it happen.
I'm going to tell you, I feel bad for David Montgomery.
I do, too.
I watched that tape.
I think everyone.
And that guy, for WWE fans out there, he did a Roman Reigns Superman punch where he reached over the ref and clocked him. And where I'm from, if I get hit in the face, I'm swinging back. I'm defending myself, because David Montgomery wasn't looking to
fight. He was just standing there.
He just happened to be standing right there, and the guy just reached over and took a sucker punch at him. I thought the Big 12 probably should have looked at that a little bit more.
I do, too.
Objectively, because David Montgomery defended himself doesn't put him in the wrong. He got hit, and he was not looking for a fight in that moment.
You know, I agree with you, said, and I'm not so sure that shouldn't have been a half game penalty, because he was definitely provoked. He didn't initiate any of that. And that's kind of the unevenness of officiating that drive fans crazy. Very much like the Kajuste day, the left tackle for West Virginia, who got, that wasn't even a punch.
No, it wasn't. He shoved him.
That was early in that Texas game, and he basically missed the whole game. And
that's their best
lineman. He's probably going to be all Big 12 tackle.
If the league had come out and said David Montgomery, his punishment will have been just the rest of the Baylor game, but we will allow you to play against Texas, everyone would have been okay with that.
Oh, yeah.
They should have been.
When you see the video, yeah, everyone would have been cool,
yeah,
with that.
He did not initiate that. So, and like I said, you know, he's probably an all Big 12 running back in the missed half a game. And this is the big game, because there's a very decent chance the winner of this game is going to tie for the regular season, you know, Big 12 championship. So,
you know, and Matt Campbell's done a hell of a job with that team. Hard to recruit to Iowa State, I would think. And the Seneca Wallace days are long past. And he's gotten that thing going, and he's probably not going to be around there for much longer.
Yeah.
His phone's been ringing, I suspect.
You know what? I'd give him a 10-year contract and like a $50 million buyout, so at least Iowa State would get rich, whoever raids him.
I like that. So, I like that.
And you know, I mentioned All Big 12. We've been talking in the office this week about the All Big 12 receivers, and you want to talk an impossible task.
Yes.
If you had to name three guys, who are your All Big 12 receivers, Sid?
I like Antoine Wesley.
Texas Tech.
I like Lil Jordan, and I like Hollywood Brown, even though he doesn't have the numbers from Oklahoma, Marquise Brown. Those three guys are really good, but I bet you that either Hollywood or LJ's not going to make it. It's going to be David Seals from West Virginia.
And what about Tyland Wallace, Oklahoma State?
I've only seen him once, and he was electric against Texas, so I wouldn't want to be on that committee.
He looked good against Oklahoma too, Brian.
I think I'm kind of with Seth on this. I mean, I think it's probably going to be Sills, Wesley, and probably Marquise,
yeah,
and Little Jordan on the outside looking in. But if Texas wins this week and LJ has some more big names or big numbers, that could flip around. We have not, no one's turned in their ballots yet, as far as I know. We had voted on the Blitnikoff Award because we were forced to do that. And I'm a Big 12 homer. I voted for all Big 12 players.
I did too.
In that deal. But, you know, we get caught up in all this stuff. And you look at LJ, and we went through so much of the season with, oh, Colin Johnson. Man, but little Jordan's going to be the one who has 1,000 yards when it's all said and done.
Colin Johnson will miss two games, and this could be three. So that's helped LJ. But LJ's just a little more physical receiver, a little more dynamic. He can carry the ball.
And he's
kickoff return.
And he's a high flyer, too.
He can do it all.
So he can jump.
Probably what we should do is, because this is the Big 12, have about six receivers on the all Big 12 team and two offensive linemen.
Oh, and so no tight end.
Oh, so now, we're giving out participation awards. There's going to be 10
no,
ten
they're
receivers,
that good.
Oh, they're that good.
I don't know if I can name six all conference linemen unless you name the entire Oklahoma, you know, starting union.
All right, let me ask you this. We touched about this, but I think this is a very interesting debate. Who on the Texas Longhorns should be on the all Big 12 team?
First team. I like Calvin Anderson, the left tackle.
Agreed.
You got to give it to somebody because that line has played really well this year.
Pass blocking.
Yeah, pass blocking.
They haven't
been
great at run blocking.
No, not great, but they pass more than they run, so they got more practice at that. Maybe Lil Jordan. And, man, on defense, maybe Charles Omenihue, maybe Phil Me. I don't know. Maybe Omenihue, but I don't know of anyone else on that defense that I would give it to. Brandon Jones has been hurt, and he was on the upswing. He had a couple of struggles, but I think his injury is going to keep him from getting first team.
I think it shows incredible progress of this where this program is.
That we're even talking about this,
number one, and that we're even talking about, well, what about Ellinger, right? Well, sorry, Kyler Murray's probably got that locked up.
And Will Greer.
But just the fact that Texas has a quarterback in the conversation.
That we're talking about
yes.
it.
Yes. I mean,
exactly.
I don't mean to sound cornball or whatever, but that's a major step forward.
Yeah. No, it is. That's huge progress. Huge progress. And I'd agree with those names that you mentioned said. I would probably put Brandon Jones in there because before he got hurt a couple of weeks ago, I'm thinking he might be up for Defensive Player of the Year in the conference.
Right.
You know, my TCU is just disintegrated this year. You know, Dakota Allen's had a good year and a sexy name, but Texas Tech doesn't play that killer of defense. There's not a Rasul Douglas for West Virginia.
And this is OU's worst defense in years.
Worst in years. So, but you're right. You're talking about progress, BD. So you got Sam Ellinger coming back next year, two more years. You lose a couple of offensive linemen.
The other thing,
you lose eight senior starters off that defense and maybe both receivers in LJ Humphrey and Colin Johnson. So I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I don't know. Does that temper your enthusiasm just a little bit for next year?
Well, here's what I would say about that. I think what you've got when you've got Colin and LJ, remember, these are two guys that just sat and watched some of their buddies leave as underclassmen, and I don't think they really went as high as they had hoped.
No, they did not.
None of them.
You're correct.
None of them did. Every single one of them were told to come back to school.
Right.
And they all know, the players who are in Moncrief right now, they know if we had those guys, we'd be damn good.
Could you imagine Connor Williams?
Malik
Jefferson.
Deshaun Elliott, Holton Hill.
The punter.
Yeah. Yeah, what's his name?
Dixon.
Yeah, I know.
If you had those players,
they kind of miss him.
If you had those players on this team, this team might be a runaway Big 12 winner.
Yeah, it really might. And one of the reasons I think they left, that was the 6-6 team before the bowl game. They did not have any of the momentum or the warm fuzzies that this year's team has.
And
maybe they might come back thinking, hey, next year we're really going to win big.
And who's to say that these guys were in love with Tom Herman? Tom Herman's not for everybody.
Could be a factor.
So. He's not. Uh-huh. But on some level, when it comes to a coaching change, I'm all for pushing out guys who don't want to be there or who are not bought in or anything like that. And that's fine. You know, go make some money in the NFL. Those guys are doing that. Freeze up cap room for the Horns.
Okay, last question I got. Which one does come out early? I think LJ leaves.
I think so too. I think Lil Jordan. I think his. Probably. I think his upside is such that he's gotten the attention of the scouts. Right. He's a big receiver who can run. That is what they want, and he's a gamer. And why stay and play for free when you can go somewhere and help a team? There are some teams in the league that could use a guy like him right now.
It's like Cardale at Ohio State.
How about one 200 miles north of here? Could use it.
Yes. How about go when you're hot?
Go when you're hot. Don't pull a Cardale Jones.
I think he does come out. I don't know if anybody else would.
I think Colin getting hurt probably keeps him here.
That's a good thing for Tom.
Probably that is a good thing for Tom. I don't know. LJ, you know, I'm not saying LJ does or doesn't go. I think he's going to have a very serious things to think about in the offseason. The one thing I did like is that, you know, he was asked about this. I want to say it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And he said, without a doubt, no matter what, he's playing in a bowl game.
He was emphatic.
He was very emphatic about that. Yes.
I love to hear that. But I don't blame guys for taking off if they're going to be a first-round pick.
Right.
I don't blame them for that, especially if they're not playing in a game of substance.
Of course, you might have said that with a bit of, it's my last chance to suit up, and you're darn right I'm going to play in that.
I didn't even think about that, Doug. That's a good point.
You know.
Yeah, like, why are you so emphatic as a junior?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's true.
Might be his last chance. Watch him walk on Saturday. Just and there's LJ Humphrey. What?
Whoa, Jordan what? Humphrey.
Oh, my God. Look who's crying. It's Tom. Tom's crying.
Well, I just think it's great. They're sitting there at 7-3, and we're covering a game on Saturday. This is actually relevant.
Yes, we are. BD, we appreciate it.
You bet, guys.
Friend of the podcast. Check him out at B Davis AAS on Twitter, and we will see you at the game. Another treat for you on Second Thought listeners. If you like the NFL, this is the guy to talk to. Houston Chronicle pro football writer extraordinaire John McClain joining us via phone. What's up, John?
All kind of things are up. Great time to be in Houston covering the Texans. 6-game winning streak after the 0-3 start. People are pumped up. Going to Washington, play the 6-3. First place Redskins and it's a whole lot more fun now than it was early in the season.
Boy, you talk about a turnaround. 0-3, dead in the water. Season's over. O'Brien, is he on the way out? And wins 6 in a row. What turned it around?
When they were 0-3, they'd lost by 7-3 and 4 points. So it was all one-score games.
Right.
And they had a lot of players coming off major injuries who had not played in preseason, missed most of camp. Might have had a cup of coffee in preseason. So they get off to the slow start. And the way the media and fans reacted here, you would have thought they'd been blown out of each game. And then they eked back. They won in Indianapolis 37-34 in overtime, beat the Cowboys in overtime the next game. And then they beat Buffalo barely. So they were winning these ugly games. And people still weren't happy when they were 3-3. And then they went to Jacksonville, won by 13, beat Miami here by 19. Watson threw 4 touchdown passes. And then the last game they were lucky to win in Denver on a missed field goal as time expired. So they've won a lot of close games. The last 3, they have not committed a turnover. Watson has 8 touchdown passes. And right now, coming off their bye week, going to Washington, they're in the best shape physically that they've been in since the start of the season.
And I'm going to tell you, John, they over the years, and you've seen more games in that city than anybody on the planet, they wouldn't have won all of these close, tight games. They would have found a way to lose these kind of games. What is it saying about the leadership in that locker room, guys like J.J. Watt and the Honey Badger on defense, and even young Deshaun Watson showing some great leadership?
That's a good point, Cedric, because it starts at the top with Bill O'Brien. One of O'Brien's strengths has been when they have losing streaks to keep the team focused. He's also been good that no matter how bad they are, what the situation, they've always played hard for him. I did a story Sunday about the turnaround, how it happened, and general manager Brian Gaines said start with O'Brien, how he handled the team when they were 0-3, how he handled the team in each of those close victories. And one of the best things about signing Tyrann Mathieu as a free agent to play safety is he was a tremendous leader at Arizona, and he's been a tremendous leader here. He's a guy that will speak out. He's a guy that will help young players. He's not shy about getting in players' faces. Watt has always been that way. They've got good veteran leadership. They're very careful about the kind of players they bring in. You know, they're not going to have somebody going on Instagram like Washington did with DJ Swearinger ripping the opposing coach because he cut him. Mm-hmm. They just don't do that. They don't bring in characters. And one of the reasons Bob McNair always said, everybody's fine when you're winning, but then when you start to lose, you bring in guys with multiple years of baggage. They're the first one to point fingers, become cancers in the locker room. They do not have that, and that's one reason they were able to turn it around.
You can't have many of those. You're absolutely right, and I guess this is a DJ Swearinger payback bowl, I guess. Winning six in a row, you're one of the hottest teams in all of the NFL. Deshaun Watson, where, you know, he started the year, maybe an MVP candidate after his meteoric rise as a rookie. Where is he right now? I know they're protecting him a little better and the defense is playing better. Where is Deshaun Watson's game right now, John?
Well, they're also throwing the ball 16 times less a game over the last three games after he was sacked seven times, knocked down 12 more by Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffalo has a really good defense.
Right.
No problems offense till they played the Jets Sunday. And so Bill O'Brien went to a much more conservative approach, running the ball now 35 times a game for 143 yards instead of 26 for 109. And so Watson has not dropped back more than 25 times in the last four games. And when he takes a sack, he was sacked four times at Denver, three were him not being able to find a receiver. Instead of throwing into coverage, he took a short sack. It was four mm-hmm. sacks for 21 yards. And even though he's like 27th in total sacks, when it comes to sack yardage, he's 14th. So he's been very smart about it. And early in the season, he threw three of his seven interceptions went end zone into coverage. He has not done that since early in the season during the losing streak. So he's playing much smarter than he did. And a lot of that's coaching. O'Brien coaches him. O'Brien comes up with most of the game plan and calls the plays. And as I mentioned earlier, he has eight touchdowns, no interceptions in the last three games. And that's one reason they've been able to win is because they have not turned the ball over. They have run it a lot. And in the last five games, their defense has given up only 15.6 points.
And you know, you just spoke about the running attack, Lamar Miller, Alfred Blue. Not household names, not Pro Bowl type players, but 800 yards rushing and three touchdowns on a team that has a Deshaun Watson and a DeAndre Hopkins. Kind of some unsung guys, but getting it done when they need them to run the football.
They've run the ball by, per game, third most in the league behind Seattle and New Orleans. And Deontay Foreman, they opened the 21-day window on him today, which means he started practicing today. He has 21 days. He can be activated tomorrow, the next day, anytime during that 21-day period. He has to be put on the roster, or at the end of the 21 days, he has to stay on physically unable to perform for the rest of the season. I don't think Deontay, who had his injury November 16th of last season, is going to need 3 weeks to get ready. I predict he'll miss this game, and then he'll make his debut in a Monday night game here against Tennessee. So if they get fresh legs with Foreman to go along with Miller and Blue, that'll just make O'Brien run the ball even more.
That can only help. And then they get Demaryius Thomas in the trade. You know, had some contribution in the Bronco game.
Three for 61.
Yeah. How do you evaluate that pickup and long term with Will Fuller done for the year?
Well, Fuller's out with a torn ACL. He had his same time as Watson.
Right.
And so he should be back during the off-season program, OTAs, and then play a little bit in preseason, be ready for the regular season without issue. They miss Fuller's speed. In his 11 games he's played with Watson the last 2 years, he has 11 touchdowns. And when he's on the field, with his speed, a safety has to always be concerned about him. So he's got to have double coverage, which helped Hopkins. Now, with him out, all the coverage can go to Hopkins, which is one reason they made the move for Thomas. Demaryius Thomas, about 6'4". He's durable. He's reliable. With two practices, he caught three passes for 61 yards, including gains of 31 and 18 yards in the first quarter. He stayed here last week during the bye week to work with the coaches. But the truth is, when you're not throwing the ball more than 25 times a game, and you're going to target DeAndre Hopkins most of the time,
right,
there's not a whole lot of balls to go around for Thomas, the tight ends, the backs. So I would say if Thomas could catch three passes a game,
they'll
the rest of the season, they would be happy, especially if it's in a red zone where he'd make a great target.
Right.
And he can still run. But, John, I'm looking at this schedule for the rest of the season, and not wanting to put the cart before the horse, but, boy, it sure looks like it. It really looks good for Houston. At Washington, winnable. Tennessee at home on a Monday night. Cleveland at home. Colts at home. And then at the bad Jets, at the reeling Philadelphia Eagles, and then a big one, Jacksonville, who I still think may figure a couple of things out here in the next few weeks.
So home games, three out of four, next four.
So it really does shape up nicely for Houston if they can keep this thing on the tracks.
That's what happens when you finish in last place, get a last place schedule. next four opponents all won Sunday. You know, Cleveland and I have two more wins. Browns got screwed by the officials, cost them two victories.
The
Redskins, even though they're not pretty, they're still in first place at 6-3. Mm-hmm. Cowboy fans ought to be cheering for the Texans big time this weekend. And then Indianapolis, I still think, second-best team in the division. They've won three in a row. They've averaged 36 points in those three games. Since going back six games, they've averaged 33.
Andrew Luck
has 26 touchdowns in the last three games. He has 10 and one interception, and he hadn't been sacked in four games, and he's playing great. So the Texans are capable of winning all those games, but they're also capable of losing.
So here's the question. Are they legit? I know they're leading the division, may well win it. Are they legit to make noise in the playoffs?
No, they're not a legit, like, Super Bowl contender. No way.
Right.
They're not as good as Kansas City. They couldn't win at New England in January or Kansas City in January, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not with this Chiefs team. Now, Andy Reid's only won two playoff games in Arrowhead Stadium since he's been the Chiefs coach, but I think we'd all agree this Chiefs team is by far the best team he's ever had. So at best, I see the Texans winning division, winning a wild card game, and then losing on the road in the divisional round, which is nobody picked that before the season. I picked them to be a wild card, finished 10-6. I knew they needed another off season. You know, when you don't have a one or two, and those are two picks that are potential starters, and their draft turned out so far has looked really good. Justin Reed, their top pick, third rounder, is playing like a first rounder at safety. But they got a one and two twos, and they'll have a lot of cap money to re-sign players like Jadeveon Clowney, Tyrann Mathieu, Kareem Jackson, who's having the best season
he
of his 9-year career. So they're going to need a lot of that cap money, but they'll still have room for some free agents. And so I would think next year is what I would call legit.
And if you kind of look around the league, because I know you keep up with it, the Le'Veon Bell thing, how do you read that, and where might he end up next year?
I think the teams that have the most cap money right now are Indianapolis and the Jets. And if Bell goes where he gets the most money, in all likelihood he's going to a loser. And he's got to be very careful because he always had a great offensive line in Pittsburgh. Coached by the best offensive line coach in the league, Mike Munchak. He had a good quarterback, receivers. Everything was tailor-made for him. If he goes to a bad team with a bad line that can't adjust to that style of running he has where he hesitates till he sees the hole, because if there's no hole, you know, he who hesitates loses.
That's right.
So I've got a feeling at this point he's going where the money is.
Yes.
And I don't blame him considering he lost $14.5 million this year. So I could see him, maybe even Philadelphia. The Eagles still need a starting running back to help Carson Wentz.
Right. And if I'm him, I go, if I'm going to a loser, I'm going warm. I'm going to Miami or someplace like that.
Tampa's another team that could use a running back.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about the Houston Texans? They don't have enough
money.
No,
there's no way they're spending that kind of money on him. They got too many other issues besides a running back.
Yeah, yeah. What do you see the Cowboys? Jason Garrett going to survive, you think?
I can't figure out the Cowboys any more than anybody else can. Nobody can.
Right.
You know, they're supposed to beat the Titans. They get beat by two touchdowns. Supposed to lose to the Eagles. They win. Now they'll probably go get beat in Atlanta. They'll beat Washington. Then they got to play New Orleans. The one thing that they have to do, and we all know this, is when they played Tennessee, it was a terrible coaching job not to get the ball to Zeke Elliott more in the second half.
Now,
they
carries.
Did that
yeah.
in his last game, and it paid off. He is their best weapon. Make him touch it as a runner and receiver between 20 and 25 times a game, and you're going to be in the game.
And it's a terrible division this year, so it's so winnable. Don't you think Jerry's just kind of waiting and praying they could maybe win the division and – okay, I'll keep Jason another year.
He'd love to be able to justify Jason Garrett, who's like his third son.
Right.
But, I mean, gosh, he's been there since 2010 as a head coach when he replaced Wade Phillips during the season. He's been there as a backup quarterback. But I think Troy Aikman said it for everybody last week.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they need to blow up the organization, but it's not going to happen because when Jerry's done making a call, Stephen Jones is going to make all of them.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as Jason Garrett, he's a good guy. People like him. But I picked them to win the division over the Eagles, and the reason is they went 9-7 without Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought with him playing six more games than last year, they ought to win 9 or 10 again. But the fact is they left Dak Prescott with a dearth of weapons other than Elliott. And that's the general manager's fault. We all know who the GM is.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who they could get. I know it's the Cowboys. It's the most prestigious job in the league, but it's different from any other when the general manager is the owner. And so I'm not so sure they could do better than Garrett.
Could you see him going after Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma?
I could see the Browns going after Lincoln Riley. Browns right now, they're not the Cowboys, but they got more talent, and they got a lot more talent coming in the draft, and they got a good GM in John Dorsey. And and if I'm Lincoln Riley and I go back and work with Mayfield and be given total control of that offense, because you know he'd want to call the plays,
sure.
I'd rather go to Cleveland than Dallas just because of the talent. That sounds terrible, of course, but him being at Oklahoma, I'm sure he'd probably rather go to the Cowboys, but you don't know what he thinks about Prescott.
Or now, Jerry.
Jerry wants a coach who's going to want Dak Prescott, not his own guy.
And he'd have less expectations. Easier to be a hero in Cleveland than it is in Dallas, unless you're winning.
That's the truth.
You know?
That's the truth.
So I don't know who else he'd look at, you know, with Jerry. You just never know. But he's got a history of going after OU quarterbacks, so, you know, so... how about your Baylor Bears? Are they going to get in a bowl game?
I'm taking the last flight to go to Washington so I can watch them play TCU on TV.
Big game.
As you guys know, TCU's down. Baylor and TCU had a great rivalry when Art Briles was there. He and Gary Patterson hated each other. And if Baylor can beat them, they're bowl eligible, which would be remarkable after winning one game. I think Matt Rhule's done a tremendous job. Love Charlie Brewer. And I think I know they've got the program headed in the right direction. And I think if Matt keeps winning, some big school's going to hire him. And unlike Art Briles, he doesn't have Texas ties. And if he leaves, I will thank him profusely for coming down here from Temple and doing what he did. But right now, he's impressed, I think, everybody with what he's been able to do. And I'd love to see him go to a bowl. I don't care, toilet bowl. I don't care what it is.
Maybe he goes to the NFL, though.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yep. Yeah, he's got some roots there with Tom Coughlin and all that. So
his name, you know, he got an interview in Indianapolis.
Yep.
His name was on a list for the Giants until they hired Sherman. Baylor people went crazy. And I said, I think that's great. He's getting all this positive pub, and every time somebody writes his name or broadcasts it, they're saying Baylor coach Matt Rhule.
Yeah, so absolutely.
You should be happy people want your coach.
Maybe Jacksonville looks at him.
It could be. I have no idea. No, I met Matt a couple times, but I don't have any idea about what his long-term aspirations are.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and Bader's done well getting him and keeping him.
Well, John, man, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for coming on again. You can check out his musings. He's very entertaining on Twitter,
he's
particularly on game day. McLean_on_NFL. John, let's do it again around playoff time, brother. We appreciate it.
Cedric and Kirk, I'm available anytime. Thank you very much. Good luck to the Longhorns, and I look forward to talking to you guys again.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, brother.
Take care, John. Bye-bye.
Bye. That will do it for episode 118 of On Second Thought. We have to thank our own Brian Davis and the Houston Chronicle's John McLean. For the Duck and our illustrious producer, Alyssa Vidalis, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.